Ahoy Mets fans, welcome to episode 247 of Mazen Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Mazen Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week. I have to put a little disclaimer up front here. Steve Schreiber and I recorded a segment for this week about the trade deadline. We did this a good 24 hours before Lucas Duda was traded, so forgive us for speculating on whether or not Lucas Duda will be traded. Also, let's say a fond farewell to the good first baseman. And here is that segment with Steve and I talking about the trade deadline. Well, Steve, we are just a couple of days away from the non-waiver trading deadline. The Mets, at the start of the All-Star break, looked like they would definitely be sellers. The team was looking pretty bad. Well, fast forward a week and a half later, the Mets have not lost a series since before the All-Star break. They split the series with the Cardinals, but have won every other series. They are currently down by one run to the Padres, but could easily be on their way to their third straight victory if things go well later this game. With the trading deadline approaching, is there any part of you that doesn't see the Mets as sellers right now? That because of their last week or so's performance, you think maybe they might stay put or even be buyers?
It's been a nice little streak. They've been playing relatively well. Pitching's been a little bit better. They're still hitting. But I think they're sellers. It seems like it's almost too perfect an opportunity to, you know, with all the free agents that they have, not to go out and try to sell some of them and get, you know, recoup something that they can bring with them into, you know, next year, the next couple of years. Because, you know, so many of these guys, they have value that you just don't want to let them walk away, I think, as free agents in the winter. It'd be one thing if they were really in the midst of, you know, the wild card or division or whatever. With how far back they are, it seems like it's the right decision to sell.
Yeah, and I think that maybe this is just a Pollyanna in me, but I feel like there's a chance that they sell and don't really lose that much of an on-field product because of it. Like, you know, Michael Conforto is not playing every day right now because of the outfield situation. He's playing most days, but, you know, he's getting days off here and there. If you trade an outfielder, Conforto's playing every day. That's probably a net positive for the team. So I'm not saying that if they sell off some pieces, they're definitely going to tank the rest of the season. I think there's a... If the Mets are going to make a run, I don't know if Jay Bruce or Curtis Granderson or Addison Reed is going to be the reason they do that.
I think the biggest piece there is Reed, actually, because just because of how bad this bullpen has been. I think they could, if they trade a Granderson or they trade a Bruce or a Duda or something like that, or as Drubal or somebody like that, I think they could reasonably replace them, whether it's with, you know, Conforto getting more at bats, whether it's with, you know, Ahmed Rosario finally being freed from Las Vegas, or Dom Smith or whoever, you know. These guys are young and they're reasonably talented enough where, you know, you don't expect them to come up and make, you know, a huge contribution, but there's the chance that they do, that, you know, they come up and, you know, they hit the ground running and, you know, they're great for a month or two. And, you know, you find yourself really not losing, you know, what the guys who got traded, you know, gave you. I think with Reed, you really don't have that, that replacement in house, at least until Jerry's Familia is back. And I mean, that could be could be another month. So to me, I think Reed is both the biggest loss just because you can't replace him, but at the same time also the most obvious trade piece because all contending teams need relievers and he's, you know, one of the top 10 maybe in baseball. So it's a double-edged kind of sword there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that one of the reasons that the Mets bullpen has been so beleaguered this year, not to borrow a term from our president there, beleaguered, is just because the starting pitching hasn't been going very deep. And now that the starting pitching is going deeper, you get the chance, you get the sense that the bullpen could be better. But like you said, you take the best piece, or at least the best right-handed piece out of that bullpen, and all of a sudden it gets much, much, much harder to compete.
Yes.
So let's sort of rank the odds here. Do you think there's let's do this. Let's do like great chance, good chance, or no chance. Okay. What Addison Reed is traded. What do you say?
I would, I mean, from everything I've seen, I would say great chance.
Great
Yeah.
chance. Okay. What about Curtis Granderson?
I'm going to say I think he's going to be an August trade, but
Okay.
I'll say decent chance. Is decent
Okay.
chance a, is that a category?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I'll
Okay,
allow
perfect.
it. Jay Bruce.
Jay Bruce, I think is, this is just on the fly, but I think he's going to stay. I think he'll stay and they'll I don't know, they'll maybe foolishly give him a qualifying offer and you know, see where it goes from there.
I feel like this is the exact same scenario as last year. They're going to give him a qualifying offer, thinking that he's either not going to take it or they can trade him with that qualifying offer
Right.
contract, and then they're not going to be able to, and you're going to be in the same situation this year with too many
All right. Well,
outfielders.
if they couldn't trade him, you know, with what, 13 million last year, you know, one year and 18 million, you know, qualifying offers, definitely going to be easier to trade, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's some Wilpon math for you
Oh,
right
yeah.
there. All right, let's go with Asdrubal Cabrera.
I think great chance.
Yeah, to me, I actually think his chances at the moment might be slightly higher than Reed's for being traded. I think that the Mets don't want him on the team when they call up Rosario. And I think they're getting to the point where they have to call up Rosario.
I'd probably put them the two of them on even plane at this point. Seems like there's some interest in him from some teams as, you know, as a utility guy or to play third base or whatever. Even with the Red Sox picking up Eduardo Nunez yesterday, I think I saw like Cleveland has a spot or like the Mariners, so it seems like there's openings and they seem motivated to move him at this point.
Yeah. All right, here are some names that I saw today that somewhat surprised me. Seth Lugo.
Yeah, Seth Lugo. I'm gonna guess little chance. I'm not gonna say no chance. But I think probably based on control, and you don't really know what you have there fully. You know, it's good that there's interest in him. But at the same time, you don't really know what you're trading and what he is, but there's some upside there. I don't think he's gonna get moved.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting idea because on one hand, I think a guy has a partially torn UCL. If a team wants to give you anything for that guy, you take it because you're rolling the
For
dice.
sure.
But Lugo's been pretty good lately, and it could be a minor injury. And with the amount of starting pitching the Mets depth, the amount of pitching depth the Mets thought they had versus what they really had, I think it's going to be hard for them to trade a starting pitcher, even one that might require Tommy John
Yeah,
surgery.
I think, you know, whether you see him as a starter or a reliever long term, you know, I feel he's more of a reliever to me, but you know, he can start and, you know, be a useful starter. And with all the injuries and, you know, all the questions they have, the Mets really can't be you know, getting rid of any starting pitching depth that they have that's, you know, major league ready. And you know, obviously if you get blown out of the water, you know, sort of the weird thing with Lugo, aside from, you know, the elbow injury, is, you know, just that he kind of came out of nowhere, and he's, you know, he's a little older, he's, you know, so he's, you know, he's a little less tested, he doesn't have really as many innings, but I think, you know, if you assume that, I mean, maybe this isn't a great assumption, but, you know, guys like, I know Roy Halladay and Wainwright and Tanaka have pitched through partially torn UCLs. You know, it's not, maybe not a great bet that he'll be able to pitch through it for a few years, but, you know, there's a shot that he might be able to, and it's tough to really get rid of that, you know, an arm like that who has some upside, you know, especially when the team's looking so questionable otherwise on the pitching side.
Yeah.
You know, unless, of course, you get thrown a ridiculous offer, then, of course, yeah, go for it.
Right, yeah. Well, that's the underlying theme of all of this, is that if you're blown away, you take that
offer.
Right,
it's the Ted Berg kind of, you know, yep. Depends on the deal sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty much what it comes down to, I think.
Yeah. What about this one I heard today? The Cubs apparently are interested in acquiring Rene Rivera.
Hell yeah, do it. Yeah. I mean, look, if, you know, Rene Rivera has been fine. He's, you know, he's a decent backup catcher, you know, good arm. He's having a, you know, for Rene Rivera, he's having a good offensive year, I guess, which is still kind of below average, but, you know, hey, yeah, I mean, if you can get anything for Rene Rivera, I think that's something that you jump on 100% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, guy who you signed is like a minor league deal. He's over 30. He got released. You know, if you can get something of pretty much any use for him, you know, hop on it and find a better catcher somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because at this point, that might give a little bit of playing time to Kevin Pilecki. There's a name you didn't expect to hear today. And, you know, I feel like Pilecki is still somewhat untested. So if this gets you even just a slight bit more information about Pilecki, that's a good thing to have. So why not trade away? Trade away, Renee.
Yeah. While I agree on trading Rene, as I said, I don't know if I want to see that much more of Kevin Pilecki. Nothing against Kevin Pilecki. I'm sure he's a nice guy, you know. Yeah, I'm a little over the Kevin Pilecki thing. But hey, yeah.
Experiment. Okay.
You know, he is something about him. It just I meld him with Eric Campbell, and it makes me viscerally angry. So,
what did he ever do to your family to get you to compare him to Eric Campbell?
He a lot of ground balls, a lot of ground balls to third base, shortstop. You know, if you go to a baseball field and you stand between third base and shortstop, and you look into the sky, Kevin Pilecki will appear in front of you. Just, you know, in case you're ever looking for him, in case you ever want to summon him, that's where you find him.
That's where you do it, okay. It's good to know. I feel like even though we're bagging Kevin Pilecki right now, the next time that one of us is in like a pickup baseball game, we're going to try this, because Kevin Pilecki is definitely better than any of my friends at baseball.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, he could kick my ass at baseball, I'm sure, so... don't take this as me saying I'm better than Kevin Pilecki. I am terrible.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying that we're gonna use him to, like, in the next Amazing Avenue pickup game.
Yeah,
we're gonna look to the sky and we'll
find him. Absolutely. That's the he's the secret ringer. He's like the, you know, the cheat code.
This is way more Pilecki chat than anybody thought we were gonna have tonight. Is there any other play? I guess Jerry Blevins, that's another player we can talk about possibly being traded.
I love Jerry Blevins. I'm a Jerry Blevins fan.
Well, you guys have personal history.
Of course. Well, yes. With, you know, the famed Avatar. that I created. But I don't know why I threw famed in front of that. That's a little conceited for me. I'm sorry. Even with that, as much as I love Jerry Blevins as a pitcher, and frankly as a person, he seems like a cool guy on Twitter, I think. He's a 33, 34 year old reliever, right? It sounds like they're not going to move him, that, they're planning on having him for next year, which makes sense. They have a cheap option on him. But I always think back to a couple of years ago when the Mets had Bobby Parnell closing, I guess it was like 2013. And he was, he's having a good year. He was closing, for the Mets, and he's having a, solid year, probably one of his best years as a Met. And at the time, he was a guy I wanted them to look to trade, see if they could bring back some, a good prospect for him with, a couple of years of control left. And at that point, basically, I think it was maybe like a day after the July 31st trade deadline, he went down with a neck injury, some sort of like a hernia.
I remember that?
Like,
yeah.
A herniated disc, yeah. Or something like that. Yep. It had to be like the day after the trade deadline, like August 1st. He went down. He missed the rest of the year with that injury.
It was never the
right.
same.
And then he came back the next year, pitched on opening day, and then went down with a torn UCL. And disappeared for a year, and then was terrible after that. I get wanting to keep your bullpen guys, especially with how awful the Mets bullpen will likely be, once Addison Reed's gone. Basically going into next year, your only sort of locks are Familia and Paul Sewald, maybe.
If Blevins is there, Blevins is
right,
locked.
Right, and yeah. Right, and Blevins if he's there. So, I get wanting to have that guy there, and he's cheap and he's good. But at the same time, if he's valuable to other teams, and you're able to kind of extract something that, that's exciting, that, you could use at the same time. I don't know. I kind of worry about missing that opportunity.
That's totally
Does that make
fair.
Sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I really wonder what sort of return the Mets could look for any of these players. Mm-hmm. I think Blevins might actually have the highest return because he does have an option for next year.
Yeah, between the control and his performance, it's he's a great reliever. But at the same time, he's a reliever.
Right.
Which is, it's kind of the toss up. But if he's back next year, I'll enjoy having him. He makes baseball game or Mets games better, at least.
Absolutely. Yeah, but let's talk about return. I mean, none of the guys we're talking about, except for Blevins, have team control beyond next year, I believe. Oh, Lugo does.
As Drupal Cabrera, too, has an
option. I forgot
option
he has an option, too, for next
year.
Yes.
Right, which is, it's like, I think it's like $8 million or something. So, it's, it's reasonable.
It's reasonable. It's probably a little bit pricey, but
right,
reasonable.
Right,
So what kind of return do you – I mean, obviously, we all hope the Mets get Mike Trout. That's always the hope.
Hey, if they pull in Mike Trout, I'll be happy. Absolutely.
you won't get mad at the
do
team?
It. No, I won't get mad. I will be very, very happy. Do it, Sandy. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I concur. Do it.
You think that's realistic?
I think so. I think the Angels could really use some bullpen depth.
Well,
how's this? I'll give him Blevins and Reed. There we go.
It's tough. It's tough.
I mean, they might have to throw in Pujols as a kicker,
yeah.
But
balance it out a little bit. Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. You know, but realistically, you know, what do you think that these Mets are worth on the open market right now for trade value? You know, I can't see the team getting much more than a mid-level prospect for any of these guys.
I think Reed might bring back a little more than that. I mean, it's you look last year what guys like what Aroldis Chapman brought back, what Mark Melancon brought back. Now, I mean, Reed doesn't have necessarily the track record of Chapman and Melancon, who had, you know, more in terms of years of dominance as, you know, as closers. But in terms of, you know, what Reed's done the last two plus years since coming to the Mets, he's been one of the you know, better relievers in the league. So, you know, even with only 2.5 months of control left, I think he's, and also with all of sort of the competition for his services, I think there's a chance they can get more, you know, maybe a top 50 guy, top 50 prospect, something like that.
See, for me, if anyone's offering a top 50 prospect for Addison Reed, I take that, no questions asked.
Yeah, and sure, I don't know if that's what's, you know, it's going to end up being. Maybe it's more like a top 75 guy or top 100 guy, something like that. But you know, I mean, what did the Yankees Gleyber Torres? I never know how to pronounce his name. And I mean, obviously, that's the pinnacle sort of that kind of trade. I mean, he's a top five prospect in baseball now.
Yeah.
So you know, they're not going to get that back. But like the Pirates got Felipe Rivera for Melancon, and you know, he's you know, an excellent reliever, back end of the bullpen guy. You know, I mean, I think there's value to be had for Reed. I don't know if they'll get a guy you know, the caliber of Torres or the caliber of Rivera. You know, those are both you know, great outcomes, obviously, but I think they can pull something in valuable for him, reasonably. Oh,
okay, is there anybody else you think would have similar value?
I mean, I think if they were looking to move Blevins, I think maybe just with the extra year of control. But even, you know, even it's tough because he's, as great as he is, he's still more of just a lefty specialist. He can kind of, you know, cross over here and there. But, you know, I think if you're looking at guys who are free agents, you know, at the end of the year, I think Reed is your most valuable proposition.
Yeah. I think that depending how other teams see Lugo might be able to bring in something.
Mm-hmm.
Of more value, but I think his elbow is going to be the thing that's going to stop him from bringing in the maximum amount of value that he would possibly have. Like, if this was Gazelman instead of Lugo, where someone does without the injury history, I think you're talking a bigger return.
Right, and you would also have it, you know, more of a sample size, I think, on Lugo, where, you know, he missed what, 3 months this year or 2 months.
Right.
So what's he thrown, like 30, 40, some odd innings or something?
Yeah.
You know, so combined with what he did last year, I think he threw like 60 innings last year in the majors. So you have, you know, a guy with good stuff. He's got some upside, but he's thrown like 100 innings combined in the majors. So it's, you know, it's between that and the elbow issue, it's a lot of risk for another team.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's definitely, I think, something that would potentially curtail his value a little bit. You never know.
Yeah, especially because, you know, while he's having a fine season, he's not even having a Gazelleman of last year season. Right. You know, if he was having a really, really hot season, that's a different story.
Right, right. And he, you know, you could say, oh, he looks like, you know, some team thinks, so. He looks like, you know, an ace or something like that, or a number two or three pitcher, you know. So, you know, he's been good, but probably more in the mid to back end range of good, as opposed to, you know. So, you know, it's valuable, obviously, especially with control, but, you know.
Yeah. Now, here's the big question. Is there any dark horse trade candidate? Anybody you... Oh, I guess we didn't talk about Duda.
I was just going to say, we have not addressed the gigantic 6'5" elephant.
The very, very good elephant.
But the very good elephant. The good, not great, but good.
The good elephant.
Yes.
What do you think the chances of them trading Duda are?
It sounds... I mean, there's not a lot of potential landing spots, which is that's the biggest, you know, question for me. The Yankees seemed like an obvious spot, you know, with their issues at first base, but supposedly they're talking to the A's about, you know, Yonder Alonso and Sonny Gray, some combination of, you know, of a trade there, and they frankly have the prospects to make it work. So, you know, Yonder Alonso's, you know, no offense to the good first baseman Lucas Duda, but you know, Yonder Alonso's having a much better year, obviously. So if they were able to pull that off, that would, you know, that'd be a great move for them. So beyond them, you know, you have teams like, you know, maybe, I know the Mariners supposedly have liked him. I know the, I think there's a rumor today that the Rays were possibly interested in.
The Rays seem like a very Lucas Duda
team. Oh, Lucas Duda is like an honorary Ray. Essentially, you know, their lineup is pretty much up and down, just like Lucas Duda's, you know, so, you know, just like the outfield version of Lucas Duda, or the shortstop version of Lucas Duda. So he would be a fit there. You know, even there, I don't, like with Tampa, I mean, they have Logan Morrison at first base, who's, you know,
who is Lucas Duda essentially.
Who is essentially, yes, Lucas Duda, who, you know, didn't miss 3 weeks and, you know, is suddenly hitting for a lot of power. So, you know, they have that. I mean, unless maybe the DH slot, I don't really know what they have there, but, you know, they've got like Steven Souza, who's like the right field version of Lucas Duda, and they have like Corey Dickerson, who's like the left field version of Lucas Duda, and, you know, the Brad Miller last year was Lucas Duda, kind of. So you know, they got them all. Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, if they want to catch them all, they do need to add Lucas Duda.
Yeah, it would be, you know, it would be a prudent move if they're looking to expand upon their wonderful stock of Lucas Duda.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they need him.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
I guess the big question, and this is a question that goes, I guess, beyond the trade deadline here, is that if the Mets really believe in Dominic Smith, then they have to trade Lucas Duda this season.
Right, right.
If they're even a little bit hesitant on Dominic Smith, don't you try and offer Duda a qualifying offer and roll the dice that way?
Yeah, or at least an extension or something, you know.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm not sure, you know, as good as he is, I'm not sure he's qualifying offer level good. I mean, $18 million is probably a little steep for him. But yeah, I totally, you know, get what you mean, that, you know, if there's any question about Dom Smith, and, you know, if they're not committed to him, you would think that they would, you know, try and make a move to re-sign Duda. I mean, by all indications, there is no question about Dom Smith. It sounds like they're, you know, the Mets are fully, you know, 100% on board the Dom Smith train. You know, it sounds like it's probably the end of the line for Lucas Duda at some point. I fully agree that they have to see what they have with Dom down the stretch. You know, and he's been, for, you know, for what it's worth, he's been killing it in Vegas the last, you know, couple of weeks too, which definitely helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if Las Vegas is, you know, the most hitter-friendly environment you could imagine,
for sure,
it still helps to see him doing what he should be doing there.
For sure, yeah. I think over the last month, I think he's hitting he's got like 7 home runs. He's hitting like .388. So he's, you know, even for Vegas, he's, you know, at this point, he's crushing it. So
yeah,
it's probably time. You got to see between him and Rosario, you have to kind of break him in and you know, make sure that they're ready to go from day one next year. If you're trying to compete in 2018, and we're, you know, it's, that seems like that's what the plan is.
Yeah, it just makes me so sad to think that Dom Smith's going to be the starting first baseman next year. I'm not ready for that. I mean, we've all known it's happening, but I'm just I'm not a Smith believer, and I fully hope he proves me wrong. I will happily eat crow on this, but
for sure. Yeah, it's, you know, you hear so many differing sort of opinions on him. You know, you go, you know, from the highest opinions, which is basically, you know, Keith Law, loves him, you know, says he thinks he's going to be, you know, 20 home run, 300 hitter, which if he is, that's great. And then, you know, you go from there all the way to the bottom of the spectrum where, you know, maybe he's what, like James Loney or something, you know,
you would know as the president of the James Loney fan club.
That's right. If you'd like membership, the James Loney fan club is moving out to Korea, by the way, just had to slip that in.
I think you're outsourcing a job here.
Yeah, USA jobs. I'm seeing what he's done in Vegas this year. I think I'm a little more optimistic. I think, you know, the power has really, you know, you expect him to hit for power in Vegas just because of the environment, but it really seems like it's finally showing up. And from what, you know, from people who've watched him, at least, it sounds like he's pulling the ball more with authority. So, you know, that's sort of what you need to see from him to sort of take that next step. And you know, if he can come up and solidify, you know, that position for the next 6, 8, 10, however many years, you know, that'd be great. Hopefully, you know, Lucas Duda is good, but hopefully Dom Smith is great.
I am so biting my tongue from making a make first base great again reference.
No,
here,
please,
so.
please don't.
Yeah, I'm just gonna let that one go. So,
sad.
So, final question for the haters and losers out there. Is there any sort of dark horse candidate that you think might wind up being traded? Some we haven't talked about that would be, maybe that would bring in more of a haul, somebody that would be a more of a clear sell than just a free agent or somebody who's sort of on the fringes?
I mean, I know we didn't. He is a free agent, and we didn't discuss him, but I still think there's a chance, you know, possibly if he comes back quickly, Neil Walker. You know,
that'd
probably
be real quick.
It would have to be quick. It would probably be an August trade, I would guess. Mm-hmm. You know, waiver trade. But, you know, as a guy who's a free agent, you know, it sounded like they, they were interested in re-signing him in spring training, and they never, you know, never made a deal with him. But, you know, as a potential free agent, you know, a guy who can play second, can maybe play third, you know, we'll find out, I guess. You know, he's versatile, he's a good bat, veteran guy, so, you know, it's always a possibility there. And then, you know, beyond that, I'm just not sure there's a ton here that's really, really tradable, you know? You got guys, you know, like Harvey and Matts and Familia who are, you know, under control, but they're, you know, either injured or they're, you know, just not playing that well or whatever. And so, you know, it becomes kind of tough at that point, you know, what are you getting for these guys, you know, right, if you're moving them.
And they're not trading DeGrom.
Right, they're not. I don't think so. Yeah, were you trying to lead me to DeGrom? Was that
No, not at all. No, I legitimately was curious if you thought anybody had any value. No, but I'm just saying.
No,
I'm sure listeners are saying, well, DeGrom has value, but they're not trading DeGrom.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about DeGrom actually. So I even if you weren't leading me to him, you inadvertently led me to him.
Okay.
So I thank you for that. But I think it's you know, it's tempting to, you know, to think like, oh, we can, you know, raid this team's farm system, you know, raid the Astros farm system and, you know, bring in all their, you know, their top five prospects or whatever, and, you know, Alex Bregman and, you know, all these guys. But at, you know, at the same time, you know, you trade Jacob DeGrom and you still have to replace Jacob DeGrom.
Right.
And it's
and there's not a chance that any of those top five prospects, I mean, there's a chance, but there's a chance those top five prospects, no one turns into a Jacob DeGrom.
Right, right. Whether it's, you know, the Jacob DeGrom of, you know, center field or whatever. You know, there's, yeah. It's, you know, it's to find a Jacob DeGrom is hard. And I think I get it from both sides of wanting to trade him and not wanting to trade him. On the one hand, obviously he's great and you don't want to, it's tough to part with a pitcher of that caliber. At the same time, for people who want to trade him, I totally get, sort of being concerned about, you know, pitchers and being concerned about injuries. You know, he's had injury issues in the past, whether it's the Tommy John surgery or the elbow issue he had last year that shut him down. So, you know, I get that sort of thing and maybe wanting to, like, you know, cash out or whatever before he, you know, if you think he's gonna, you know, his arm's gonna blow up or something, you know, trying to, like, cash out. And, I think if, you know, watching what he's done this year, he's on pace to set, you know, career high in innings. He's been unbelievable the last, month and a half, 2 months, you know, while throwing a bunch of innings. So I think it's, you know, it's tough to move that kind of guy. Even if, you know, taking into account that pitcher's break.
Right. Right. Well, we've quoted both now, Ted Berg and Toby Hyde. So if we can get
a Patrick Flood
quote in there, right, we're taking care something, of the old
something about Ruben Tejada.
Exactly.
I don't know what Patrick would say, but
Patrick and I played fantasy baseball together one season.
Oh, nice. And how did that go? Did
you? I have no recollection. It was like 3 years ago. I can't remember anything about it.
I was gonna ask, did you win the league, or did you dominate him or something? Or,
no, I think we were both kind of middle of the pack.
Okay. So that's boring then.
It is. Anyway, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun. We'll do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Great.
Hey everyone, this is T. Siper, and I'm back to go over our minor league plays of the week for week 16. So, the Las Vegas 51s went 2-5, which gives them a win-loss record of 37-63, putting them 17 games behind the Salt Lake Bees, first place in the PCL, Pacific Southern Division. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies had a busy week this week, because a couple of games suspended early in the year because of rain were played out this week, and they went 3-5. Which puts them at 52-43 for the season, and 12.5 games behind the Trenton Thunder for first place. St. Lucie went 3-4, and are 11-18 in the second half, which puts them 7.5 games behind the Fort Myers Miracle for first. The Columbia Fireflies went 4-2, giving them a 12-16 record in the second half, which is 7 games behind the Charleston River Dogs for first place. The Cyclones had a good week for a change. They went 5-2, and that puts them at 11-21, which is 11 games behind Staten Island for first place. The Kingsport Mets went 3-4 and are 12-16 for the year. And finally, the GCL Mets went 3-4 with a rain suspension, and are 7-14 for the year. So, our pitcher of the week for week 16 is GCL right-hander Jason Valera. He pitched a doubleheader, 7-inning complete game shutout, allowing 4 hits, walking 2, and striking out 7. So Valera was signed in November of 2015. Like Jason Campos, he pitched for the Caribes de Enzo Atitigi, a team in the Venezuelan Professional Baseball League. He was signed to the DSL teams when the league started up in June 2016, and pretty much he was head and shoulders above the competition that he faced. Because he's a little older, you know, he turned 20 on June 19th, and because of how much better he was than the competition down there, he came stateside this year, and he was assigned to the GCL Mets, and so far he's been impressive. You know, the GCL stats don't really matter too much, but for what it's worth, he's posted a 1.50 ERA in 24 innings, allowing 15 hits, walking just 4, and striking out 25. So, coming by information about foreign players this low in the minor league ladder is a bit hard. But from what I've able to uncover about Valera, most of the success that he's had so far is because of his heavy fastball, so it gets a lot of weak grounders, and a very advanced changeup for his level. So, he's another guy on that GCL team that, you know, just keep an eye out for the rest of the year and, you know, in the years or so to come, because there's a lot of potentially good talent down there. And now our hitter of the week is St. Lucie Mets first baseman Peter Alonso. He was on fire this week. He was 10 for 30 with 3 doubles, 5 home runs, 9 RBI, a walk, and 4 strikeouts. So Alonso was Player of the Week back in Week 12, which was June 18th to June 24th. And at the end of that week, he was hitting .235, .295, .451. So that was about a month ago, roughly. And fast forward, and now he's hitting .261, .324, .513. So, I mean, other than the improvement in the stat line, nothing too much has changed with Alonso. Mixed reports, you know, he's a little bit of a divisive guy, but going forward, you know, we'll see. It's too bad that he hurt his hand early in the year and he missed time, because, you know, if he was hitting like this in May or June, you know, his developmental track might have been quickened a bit with a midseason promotion at Binghamton. And I, you know, Matt Oberstee's playing the bulk of first base up there right now, and no offense to Oberstee, but I don't think he's going to block Peter Alonso. Oberstee's having a decent season. He's hitting .285, .368, .397, which is 112 WRC+. But, you know, Alonso is probably in the Mets' long-term plan somehow. You know, barring some kind of amazing transformation that no one's going to see coming, Matt Oberstee really isn't in those long-term plans. So, those are our minor league players of the week, and I'm Steve Siper, and I'll talk with everyone next week on Amazing Avenue Audio.
With trade winds swirling as the July 31st non-waiver deadline approaches, here are the five best trades the Mets have ever made, regardless of date. However, number five was made right at the end of the July 31st 4 p.m. wire. It came 2 years ago, involving Yoenis Cespedes coming from the Detroit Tigers. GM Sandy Alderson would not and could not stand with the status quo. Pitching was keeping the Mets above 500 and within arm's reach of the NL East leading Washington Nationals, despite an offense that was short on power and shorter on depth. As that July 31st trade deadline approached, Mets management bewailed over the failed attempt a few days before to acquire Carlos Gomez from Milwaukee in exchange for Zach Wheeler and Wilmer Flores. The target then became Cespedes, 18 home runs, 61 RBIs, and a .293 average with Detroit. At the 11th hour, Alderson shipped off Luis Sessa and Michael Fulmer, the organization's best pitching prospect, for an instant offensive upgrade. But no Mets fan could have anticipated the ripple effect the addition of Cespedes would have. The lead driver in a three-month thrill ride to the NL pennant, Cespedes proved to be a switch flipper on a lineup that went from powerless to powerhouse. In 57 games, he hit 17 home runs and drove in 44 with a .604 slugging percentage. Fulmer has been one of Detroit's best pitchers, and Cespedes has yet to be healthy enough to play a full season in New York, but getting the World Series in 2015 validates this trade. The argument could be made that the trade for Cespedes was akin to 1969's deal for Don Clendenin, the number four trade on our list. In flair, no, Clendenin would never wear canary. In terms of instant impact, definitely. The Mets were already the surprise of the league by mid-June, the time of the old trade deadline. But a power bat in the middle of a mainly contract-driven offense would do very nicely to complement the great pitching staff. Don came over from the expansion Montreal Expos in exchange for five pedestrian players and immediately was inserted as the regular first baseman. By hitting 12 home runs in 72 regular season contests, the Mets erased the Chicago Cubs' large NL East lead and surged to the division title, and then the National League pennant. Then, in the World Series against Baltimore, Clendenin was most impactful, batting .357 with three homers to win the Most Valuable Player award. Number three also comes with help from Montreal, and it occurred in the winter of 1984. At this point, after a second-place finish, the Mets were on the verge, with Gooden, Strawberry, and Hernandez leading the way. They needed an additional veteran presence, and Carter, arguably the best catcher in the game, fit the bill perfectly. To get him, New York parted ways with Mike Fitzgerald, Herm Winningham, Floyd Yeomans, and Hubie Brooks, the latter a popular player coming off a year in which he enjoyed a 24-game hitting streak. But the move for Carter worked out wonderfully, and any questions about him disrupting the dynamic were erased instantly when he debuted with a game-winning home run against the St. Louis Cardinals on opening day 1985. Of course, 1 year later, the Mets were the champions. Carter was the team leader in runs batted in and extremely influential behind the plate in cultivating a dominant pitching staff. Another catching star was the main piece of our number two trade. A mere 8 days after being dealt from Los Angeles, the fire-selling Florida Marlins quickly turned around and traded the game's top slugging catcher to Flushing. The improving Mets had slightly missed out on the wild card in 1997, and with the blockbuster deal going down in June of 1998, Queens went from having a potential contender to a legitimate one. Piazza continued to be a premier offensive force for the next 3-plus months, hitting .348 and drilling 23 home runs in his 109 games with the Mets. That continued for nearly all the following 7 years, posting better than a .300 batting average and connecting on at least 30 home runs 4 straight times and making 6 more appearances on the All-Star roster, en route to the Hall of Fame and his number 31 being retired atop Citi Field. Two of the three players in the deal, Jeff Getz and Ed Yarnall, were barely heard from again, while Preston Wilson became famous for his incredible penchant for striking out, including 187 in the year 2000. Now on to the number one trade in Mets history. In the Mets' long rebuilding plan of the early 1980s, prospects alone weren't going to solve the problem. General manager Frank Cashin then struck gold at the 1983 trade deadline by acquiring Keith Hernandez, who had fallen out of favor in St. Louis with Cardinals manager Whitey Herzog. The price to get him? Neil Allen and Rick Owenby. The Cardinals were fleeced. The Mets were thrilled to be getting a player of Hernandez's caliber. Unfortunately, the initial feeling wasn't mutual. Going from the team that had just won the World Series to a team that was mired in misery was not a venture Keith wanted to partake in, at least past 1983. Cashin convinced Keith of the prospects that had arrived and the prospects that were in the pipeline. Hernandez, of course, stayed. He was the ideal leader on a team desperate for one. Keith's impact came in the form of his amazing glove at first base and his consistent bat. His talent and guidance helped drive New York into the National League's upper echelon and eventually to that 1986 World Championship. June 15, 1983, turned out to be the sea change in Mets history that affected every move that followed. That's all for this list. Next week, we'll explore the worst trades in Mets history, and you can be sure there are plenty to choose from. I'm Brian Wright. You can follow me on Twitter at BrianWright86.
I have literally nothing to report because the Mets have literally not done anything since I talked to you last. They've played baseball. They've won some games. Whatever. I don't care about that anymore. But they're not trading their players. And I don't know if Sandy's got something up his sleeve or if the market just isn't there. Or if they're dumb enough to think that they hold on to everyone they can compete. Whatever it is, they're all still here. Rene Rivera is supposedly getting some looks from the Cubs. Sure, whatever. I don't know what you're getting for him. Jay Bruce is still out there. Yubel Cabrera is still out there. Curtis Granderson is still out there. Addison Reed is still out there. And we're closing in on the trade deadline, and everyone else is making trades. And the Mets are decidedly not. So I have no idea. I really hope I have some good news for you next week, or things are happening and we just don't know about it because they're leaked. They haven't leaked yet, which is highly unlikely from this organization. But it's getting close enough that I'm worried that they're just going to be stuck with everyone because they're, I don't know, too greedy? We're at the point that you just take what you can get. There's no point in holding on to these contracts. If you have to get, you know, a crummy prospect, you just do it. So, I don't know what Sandy's waiting for.
Well, folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue Audio. Thank you so much for listening. We truly appreciate it. Please go to Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice and rate, review, and subscribe to the show. All three of those things, especially the reviews, really do help us, so thank you in advance. You can also find the show directly at blogtalkradio.com, or you can search for Amazing Avenue Audio on the internet, and I'm sure you'll find it someplace. You can also go to amazingavenue.com to find out all about the Mets, all about our show, all about baseball this time of year. We have lots of trade deadline coverage. You know, there's a great piece out there about Drew Smith, the piece that the Mets got for Lucas Duda. So make sure to read that to see what kind of return we got for the good first baseman. You can also find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. And, of course, you can find all of our contributors on Twitter. I am at Brian Znapp. Steve is at SShriber13. Steve Sipa is at Steve Sipa. Kate Feldman is at Kate E. Feldman. And Brian Wright is at BrianWright86. So, now that Lucas Duda is gone, I figured the best way to end the show is to do so quietly. So, let's go, Mets.